Bloomberg on the Economy with Mike McKee and Sarah Eisen.
Kamal Sreekumar is with us. Of course, he's the chief investment strategist at TCW. Nice enough to fly all of this way just to see us in New York.
Absolutely.
Drop of a hat. Ali calls, you get on a plane. We love that.
Especially when Greek lunches may be at a discount today. Big discount.
There you go. Yeah, 30 cents on the dollar. If you were a holder of Greek paper, would you take the deal?
Well, I think the ones which are maturing on March 20th clearly are going up substantially in price. So I don't know that there is much of an arbitrage opportunity yet in that. But say you come in at 92 cents on the euro, just on that paper. I think that is, you probably are taking a significant amount of risk. In the sense that your loss, I think, probability outweighs your probability of a gain. Why does that happen? Greece obviously does not have that money. And we are talking about repaying 14.5 billion euros for a country with a very small population. We are talking about paying about 6-7% of GDP in one payment. So I don't think it is going to happen. There is going to be some form of a cram down, which the prime minister has hinted at. And anything, I think, would be negative for these holders, first. Second, if you do get into it, you better be ready for a bitter quarrel, meaning that there is going to be a lawsuit of some kind. You even hear that if they deny you your 100 cents on the euro, then you are going to be considered your human rights being violated in Greece because your property rights are your human rights. Well, so it's going to be a long, long fight, Michael, and I'm not sure.
This is the law, you mean? This is the human rights law?
This is the human rights law so that Greece, because the debt, Sarah, is in the Greek courts. Mm. And obviously, the foreign creditors can't win in a Greek court. However, if you say that the Greeks have violated your human rights, then you can go to the European court. And there, the hope is that there would be a better chance of success. But you're talking about a lot of conjecture and a lot of weight. I don't know whether it makes sense to buy it at 92 cents for 1 euro, and you're having all this risk in exchange for that.
So essentially you're saying, get ready for the Greek default.
I have been saying, and I continue to say, get ready for a Greek default. Whether you get to go out and enjoy after the Greek news comes out today, Michael, or whether it's going to be only after March 20th, we don't know. But I think from now to March 20th, you're going to be on default watch. I don't think there is any escape.
And what does that mean? Does that mean Portugal then goes next?
Well, Portugal, I think clearly there is in the path. If Greece defaults and if you have the CDS contracts being called, if that is a credit event, I think first of all, it is going to hurt Portugal because we saw the yield shoot up on Monday after the two-notch downgrade on Friday. And after it is Portugal, it's anybody's guess where it's going to go on, because I think you're looking at a domino effect, and which is why, in my opinion, what the Europeans should have done is to take action on Greece a long time ago, 2 years ago, so that they could have limited the spillover. But now I think it's getting too late to stop it.
There have been some successful Spanish auctions, though, recently, and we've seen yields on Italian paper come down quite a bit. They've also passed their austerity measures, and they've been living with a primary surplus. So there's been some speculation that it stops after Portugal. You don't think so?
I would say two things, Michael, in return to what you said about Spain and Italy. First is, many of the Spanish paper where the auctions were successful are shorter term. We are not talking about 10 years. You're talking about auctions for shorter periods of time. When the three-year repurchase agreement, which Spanish banks as well as other banks have with the European Central Bank, can be used to purchase Spanish bonds and essentially bring the price up or the yield down. The second, as far as Italy is concerned, we have seen those rallies in the past. We have also seen Greece rally in the summer of 2010 after the so-called bailout of May 2010. Greek yields came down about 150 to 200 basis points, only to see it go up again. So I would not advise your investors to be going in at this point in time thinking that the worst is past, because you need to be very, very nimble. Perhaps a hedge fund can do it if you're going to be going in the morning and getting out in the afternoon. But for a day-to-day investor, it's still very risky.
But the European Central Bank has shifted its strategy a little bit with the, well, a lot, really, with the long-term auction. And that has restored at least some calm to the European bond markets. And the bond sales have gone relatively well recently. So when do you think the tide turns again?
The tide turns again. If you were to ask for a particular time, my target is March, because a lot of things happen. Italian repayments is about 300 billion euros this year out of a total debt of 1.9 trillion. And a good chunk of that thing is bunched up February through April. So that's a big risk factor. Second is, again, Greece, assuming we don't have any resolution today and they tell us that they are going to be continuing to negotiate, Sarah, I think March 20th becomes the critical date. So despite the European Central Bank efforts, my concern comes from the fact that what the ECB is doing is to deal with it as a liquidity problem, whereas what you really have with the European banks is a solvency issue.
It all comes back to that.
Yeah. It comes back to that, doesn't it? And you've spoken on both radio and television on Bloomberg that you are talking about a huge chunk of money to be raised before June 30th. Mm-hmm. The European Banking Authority estimates it at 115 billion euros. And I think even that is an underestimate. And we saw that when UniCredit was trying to raise funds, it was not an easy thing for it. And now you're looking at a whole lot of European institutions standing in line to get it done. So that's why I'm not yet convinced that the ECB and the actions it has taken is going to work out.
If Greece defaults and everybody turns their attention to Portugal, how's that expressed? Because Portugal, at this point, doesn't have, they're not accessing the markets anyway, and they don't have a real rollover problem this year to $10 billion in bonds in June, something like that.
I think it expresses itself, Michael, and that's a very good question, by the way. It doesn't show up in terms of auctions failing, because they don't need auctions if you don't need to roll anything over. But yields are going to keep rising. So notionally, the market is going to suggest to you that the Portuguese risk is increasing. In turn, that affects, again, CDS swaps and where they are trading, and also what the implications are for other countries. So what you have is, this is the chain that I would suggest to you, that if you have a Greek default, you have an increase in Portuguese yields, and then with Italy due to roll over something like 16% of its total debt to be rolled over this year alone, it has difficulty rolling it over. So in one case, it shows up in terms of an increase in yield as far as Portugal is concerned. In the case of a few other crisis countries, it is going to show up in terms of problems with the rollover, problem in having auctions.
And we have seen that increase in yield. We reported it here this week. 13.3% is your yield right now in a Portuguese 10-year, and it's right around a euro-era record high reached this week. We want to turn the focus to the United States, though, because big numbers out. Housing missed, actually, on the actual number, the headline number, existing home sales. But as our brilliant Michael McKee was pointing out, beneath the numbers, some of the factors like inventories looked really positive.
I think the housing sector is coming to a resolution. I think we are bottoming out. What I'd like to see is something not happen. Michael referred to it earlier in the program, Sarah, which is anything like a mortgage cramdown, anything else the government does to try to artificially, I call it, help the mortgage market. If that were done, you have a temporary increase in prices, as we saw in 2009 and 2010, and then it goes down again. My concern is not that the housing market is going to be a permanent drag on economic growth. I don't think it will be. I think this is about the last year in which the housing is going to be a negative. Unless we have stimulus measures which boost the economy in the next 3 to 6 months, and then you have a housing problem return in 2013. Otherwise, I think Michael is right on the mark, spot on, in terms of looking at some of the good features taking place this year.
Well, are we starting to get into a virtuous cycle?
I don't think it is a virtuous cycle yet. And again, we had Juliana talk in the program before regarding what the Obama administration is concerned about, namely the tail risk, what happens in the case of Europe, for instance. And I feel increasingly that the European situation is out of control. We have seen the crisis go on for 2 years. The problem or the difference between what they are going through now, Michael, and what Latin America went through in the 1980s, Latin America was a very small part of the world. We didn't worry very much. Keep in mind, the European Union is larger than the United States today in terms of total GDP, and they are at risk. And that's why I think the U.S., which is a smaller part of the overall world economy, as well as smaller than the European Union, feels the negative impact of the high winds coming from Europe.
In other words, the U.S. may be recovering, but it's certainly not a strong enough recovery to insulate itself from a worsening of the crisis in
Europe. That's perfectly put. And my comparison is to say that you have a plane which is not flying at 30,000 feet. It's unable to rise to 30,000 feet, but it's just doing 8,000 to 10,000. So anything small, any shock, quickly brings it down to earth, because you have very little time to adjust it and move up again. That's exactly what the way you mentioned it. We are not having self-sustained growth. We don't have rapid growth. So we are very vulnerable to the other shocks that come.
Now, at this time last year, we were seeing some good economic numbers, and we got some job growth figures over 200,000, and then all of a sudden fell off a cliff. We're there again. Do we sustain that? Do the numbers suggest that we're going to continue to see that kind of job growth and finally break out of the jobless recovery?
Well, January might still be a good month for job growth, but then keep in mind that the expectation is that the growth is going to slow from the overall growth in GDP will slow from the fourth quarter to the first quarter and then on to the second. And whether you end up with a negative growth, as I think we might end up in the next few months or not, Michael, you're looking for clearly a slowdown, and that's going to be negative for employment generation. The second point is that while you have the 8.5% overall unemployment rate, I look at the fact that we still have 5.8 million fewer jobs today than we had in December 2007 when the recession began. Unlike a country like Germany, which gained back all the jobs it lost and has created more jobs, we have still a big deficit. And I can't see the job situation being described as healthy unless that is corrected. And that requires 3.5, 4% growth, which we just haven't had yet.
And it sounds like you don't think we're going to have. Remember, you gave us that forecast for the 10-year yield to keep falling through 2012. So far, it's rising. It's early yet.
Well, I mean, today it's rising.
Today it's about
2%. Going in the right direction.
Well, earlier this week, Sarah, we were below 190, and we are just a light part over 2% today. But keep in mind that the news is good on the U.S. economy, and there has been, again, optimism on the European front, and both of them are reflecting themselves in a higher 10-year yield here. But if you were to reverse any of them, and going to Michael's question, you do have a fall-off in the employment generation, or you have a shock coming from Greece or from Portugal, then I think the 10-year yield goes down again. So my expectation is, and again, I recall you mentioned this before the break, my expectation is that the 10-year yield will indeed go toward the 150 mark later on this year. I don't worry about week-to-week fluctuations because I simply can't be a market timer. But I think if you give it a few months, I think it is headed downward before it hits, let's say, 225 again. Going on the other direction.
What risk is there, speaking of political problems that could affect the markets, what risk is there from Washington this year? Not only because they're not smart enough to figure out how to cut the budget deficit, but because it is an election year and all kinds of weird things happen in election years.
Lots of risk, Michael. I would begin by saying what we are doing is to have this payroll tax cut extended through the end of February. The expectation is it'll go through the end of the year. One big risk is that the super committee could not even cut $1.2 trillion of deficit over a 10-year time period, let alone the much bigger Simpson-Bowles committee recommended cut. The risk you run is that at some point in time, the markets refuse to finance the budget deficit. And then, Sarah, we come to the opposite of the lower 10-year yield. The yields start to rush up when that happens. So while I am saying that the yield can go down further from about the 2% mark today, I'm not saying that is permanent. I always couch it by saying investors need to be very nimble and it rises again. The other points we have seen this week, the change in circumstances in the South Carolina primary and where we are headed in tomorrow's primary, what we are seeing is that Mr. Romney's choice is not just as automatic as it seemed a few days ago, especially after last night's debate. So if you have more of an uncertainty, and then again, it looks as if the president is gaining the upper hand, and with the good news on employment and the inventories that you talked about recently, then you have a lot of other uncertainty as well ahead of the November elections. It doesn't look like as much of a done deal as it seemed a few weeks ago.
Well, it's certainly a risk. You mentioned the possibility that we might see some sort of stimulus in 2012. Is that your view, that we are going to see it from the U.S. or from the Federal Reserve?
From the U.S., meaning the U.S. Treasury, fiscal. I don't expect it. But from the Federal Reserve, I do expect it. Despite the story, Sarah, in the Wall Street Journal today, that there will not be a QE3 announced in next week's Fed meeting, my expectation is that they are going to lay the ground for easing to come in subsequent months. And why? One major excuse is going to be that Europe is a big risk and they have to ease. And if you did have a Greek default, if you did have Italy worsening in terms of its debt servicing difficulties, that becomes the reason why a QE3 should be begun in the United States, which says this is a substitute for more easing by the ECB itself. So I see a QE3, that kind of easing, very much in the cards, especially in an election year.
Well, we're seeing a little bit of stimulus from the ECB with the money they've put into the markets. It seems to be sloshing over into equities and commodities.
That's absolutely right. They are doing it. But yet, you also see some objections coming up from the German side, Michael. And I would wait to see how much the Europeans can go further with regard to the stimulus or whether it has to come more from the U.S. side than from Europe. It's not clear to me yet that the European Central Bank can continue to ease substantially, keeping in mind that the German objection to Mario Draghi being named the president was the fact that he was Italian. And if that, again, confirms some of the worst German fears, you have problems not just on the Greek side. You have Germans refusing to participate in any more of the rescue mechanism. And that, in my mind, is a sleeper. We haven't come to that yet.
So the Fed might have to step in, huh?
Kamal Sreekumar, thank you for being with us as always.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure to see you here. We're coming to the West Coast next time.
Listen to Bloomberg on the Economy weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012.